Jamuna Tira Panachari. Jaya Radha Matova Kunja Bihari. Radha Matova Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivara Dari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivara Dari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Matava Kunja Bihari. Hey Radha Matava Kunja Bihari. Jayam Vishnupad, Paramahamsa, Parigrajikacharya, Ashtotala Satashishi Mad, His Divine Grace. Eshi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Shri Prabhupada Ki Ananta Koti Vaishna Brindiki Grantaraja Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Goprimanande. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to the Assembled Devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Narayanam namaskritya naram cheva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udirayat. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 2, chapter entitled The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis, text number 9 to 13. Tasya dronyam bhagavato varunasya mahatmanaha ujanam ritumam nama akridam surayoshitam tashadronyam bhagavato varunasya mahatmanaha ujanam ritum mannama akridam surayoshitam Tasya dronyam bhagavato Varunasya Mahatmanah Ujjanam Ritumannama Akridam Surayoshitam to Jesus. Tasya, of that mountain, Trikuta, Dronyam, in a valley, and Bhagavata, of the Great Personality, Varunasya, the demigod Varuna, Mahatmanaha, one who is a great devotee of the Lord, Ujjanam, a garden. Ritumat. Nama, of the name. Akridam, a place of sporting pastimes. Surayoshitam, of the damsels of the demigods. Translation and Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In a valley? No, I'll just read it. Thank you for your enthusiasm. In a valley of Trikuta Mountain, there was a garden called Ritumat. This garden belonged to the great devotee Varuna and was a sporting place for the damsels of the demigods. Flowers and fruits grew there in all seasons. Among them were mandaras, parijatas, patalas, ashokas, champakas, chutas, pialas, panasas, mangoes, amratikas, pramukas, coconut trees, date trees, and pomegranates. There were madukas, palm trees, tamalas, asanas, ajunas, arishtas, adumbaras, plakshas, banyan trees, kimshukas, and sandalwood trees. There were also pichumadas, kovidaras, saralas, suradarus, grapes, sugarcane, bananas, jambu, badaris, akshas, apayas, and Amalakis. So I'll also read 14 to 19. In that garden, there was a very large lake filled with shining golden lotus flowers, and the flowers known as Kumuda, Kalara, Utpala, Shataphatra, which added excellent beauty to the mountain. There were also Bilva, Kapita, Jambira, and Balataka trees. Intoxicated bumblebees drank honey and hummed with the chirping of the birds, whose songs were very melodious. The lake was crowded with swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and flocks of water chickens, dayuhas, koyashtis, and other murmuring birds. Because of the agitating movement of the fish and tortoises, the water was decorated with pollen that had fallen from the lotus flowers. The lake was surrounded by kanumba flowers, vetasa flowers, nalas, nipas, vanjulakas, kundas, kudubakas, ashokas, shirishas, kutajas, ingudas, kubjakas, swana yutis, nagas, pudnagas, jatis, malikas, shatapatras, jalakas, and madhavilatas. The banks were also abundantly adorned with varieties of trees that yielded flowers and fruits in all seasons. Thus the entire mountain stood gloriously decorated. Purport. Judging from the exhaustive description of the lakes and rivers on Trikuta Mountain, on earth there is no comparison to their super excellence. On other planets, however, there are many such wonders. For instance, we understand that there are 2 million different types of trees, and not all of them are exhibited on earth. Srimad Bhagavatam presents the total knowledge of the affairs of the universe. It not only describes the universe, but also takes into account the spiritual world beyond the universe. No one can challenge the Srimad Bhagavatam's description of the material and spiritual worlds. The attempts to go from the earth to the moon have failed, but the people of earth can understand what exists on other planets. There is no need of imagination. One may take actual knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam and be satisfied. Omagyan timanandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshurin militam jena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati swa badantikam vancha kaupatarubhyascha kripa sindhu bi evacha petitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadha, Shri Vasadi, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So the chapter is called The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. So it's a famous chapter, and interesting chapter, actually, of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here we're hearing a description of the heavenly planets and how opulent it is. And as Prabhupada points out in the purport, there's a description in the Bhagavatam of the material world, but also the spiritual world, what it's like in the spiritual world. The spiritual world is the most opulent place. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, this world is a reflection of the spiritual world. Just like on the lake, you'll have the tree, and then you'll have another tree on the lake, which looks exactly like the tree on the land. But as soon as you touch that tree, it disappears. So one is real, one is temporary, it's false. Whereas in the spiritual world, it is like that. Everything is eternal. That is called Sandini Shakti. Sandini Shakti means everything lasts perpetually. But in the material world, it looks the same, but it does not last. You come back here in 1,000 years, it won't look the same. You know, most likely all the buildings will be gone and everything will look completely different. So the material world is temporary. Ashashvatam, right? Everything is temporary here. Whereas in the spiritual world, everything lasts forever. Now, the spiritual world is far superior. And you hear descriptions, actually, of what it's like in the spiritual world. We hear, for example, in Radha Kund. Around Radha Kund, there are different forests, six seasonal forests, because in the spiritual sky, and also if you go to India, there are six seasons. So we have summer, we have winter, we have autumn, we have spring, but then there is also monsoon, and sometimes we call it the dew season, or it's like a second summer. There's the pre-summer before monsoon, then there's also the lighter summer after monsoon. So there are six seasons. And around Radha Kund, Shyama Kund in the spiritual world, and also when Krishna manifests Radha Kund and Shyama Kund in this world, the six seasonal forests exist. So you can, Radha and Krishna can choose which forest they want to go into. Now let's go and visit the winter forest. So you go into winter, everything is like winter. And then you can go into the summer forest or the spring forest or the monsoon forest. Everything is there for Krishna's pleasure because the spiritual world is conscious. And we were explaining that last night in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The entire spiritual world is created or exists on the platform of Sandini Shakti. And Sandini Shakti, you could say, is under the control of Lord Balaram. Lord Balaram is Krishna's first expansion, and from him everything emanates. No? So the whole spiritual world is sustained by Lord Balaram's energy. Like it explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita and Adi Lila, that Krishna's flute, his bed, his shoes, everything, it's an expansion of Nityananda Ram, of Lord Balaram. So the whole spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan is like that. It is there for Krishna's pleasure. And it says the Goloka planet is shaped like a lotus. So you see like on the pillars, you have the lotus. So the lotus can expand and contract like that. So that's why the planet is shaped like a lotus, because Krishna can be in Kamyavan, for example, which is on the western side of Braj, like right out on the edge. But then maybe he wants to go travel all the way back to, say, Gokul or something. So it's a long way to go. You have to get a Tata bus, and then you have to travel. It takes, you know, over 1 hour. But Krishna, if he wants to travel quickly, then the planet, the Goloka planet, it comes back, right? Withdraws, and then Krishna can just move quickly across the petals, wherever he wants to go, and then goes back out again. Why? Because the whole planet is conscious. It's an expansion of Lord Balaram's energy. So therefore, it is there to serve Krishna. That's the difference between the material world and the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, everything is there to serve Krishna. Right? Even the sentient things, the things which do not move, right? They're there to serve Krishna. Right? And in the material world, things are not there to serve Krishna. Now, in the material world, everyone just wants to be served themselves. Serve me. Come and serve me, then you'll be happy. But then everyone thinks the same way and everyone doesn't agree and then there's conflict. So that is the nature of the material world. It is different. So here we're hearing a description of Swaga. Swaga means the heavenly planets. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's guru, says there's nothing lacking in the material world except Krishna consciousness. So practically the material world is like the spiritual world, almost, because it's actually, we've been studying this recently as well in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Maya, or the Mahatattva, or Pradhan, or the material creation, it's actually a transformation of Brahman. Right? It's actually spiritual energy, but then it becomes tainted. And it comes in contact with the three gunas, the three modes of nature. And then it becomes an inferior energy. It becomes the inferior creation. Apara Prakriti, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. But actually, it's created originally from the spiritual energy. Right? Everything comes from the spiritual energy. But then it becomes apara, it becomes lesser or defective or inferior. So that's what the material energy is. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, actually everything is here except Krishna consciousness. If you add Krishna consciousness, actually this material world, it's like a loka, almost. Except we get old and we get sore knees. And, you know, we have a few problems along the way. But actually, it's almost the same. So swaga is almost like the spiritual world, almost. Right? It's a superior place. So that's where all of this was taking place, with Gajendra, in the heavenly planets. Far superior place. And we just had these two verses that explain all of the details of what it was like there. Right? It's a very opulent place. Srila Prabhupada, on his last trip, the last time he travelled outside of India, was in 1977 in August. And if you know Prabhupada's Leela, the Leelamrita, Prabhupada was very unwell in August. He left in November. You know, so it's only a few months before. Brahmananda Prabhu had to carry him onto the plane, carry him into the car. Like, Prabhupada was very weak at that time, you know, because he was 80 years old and his body was deteriorated. But it's interesting, that last trip, Prabhupada was only going to visit the farms. Right? It's interesting. Because he said, you know, that the only thing I have not done in my mission is establish Varnashram. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the farms are to display Varnashram Dharma. That's why the farms are very important. And unfortunately, in most of the farms in ISKCON, we still haven't got it to where it needs to be. Yeah, you know, there's a few farms we could say are very close, you know, like New Brajdam in Hungary and some of the other farms. You know, they're very well developed, but most of our farms are not very well developed, not to the degree they need to be, almost like self-sustaining or greatly sustaining. They need to be developed. But that was Prabhupada's last mission, so to speak. He wanted to create the farms because we're meant to live in a natural environment. The cities are completely artificial, right? It's not natural living here in the cities, right? It's not comforting for the mind. Prabhupada said when there are hills, right, and when there are valleys and rivers and trees, he said that is natural opulence. That's all humans need. You know, Prabhupada stayed in, I think it was 1967, he stayed in New Brindavan for about 2 or 3 weeks, or maybe even a month. Prabhupada just stayed there. He said, that's all we need. He said, just the devotees were growing wheat, milking the cows. He said, that's all we need. And Prabhupada was just eating the chapatis coming from the wheat which they were growing on the farm. They're milking the cows. And Prabhupada said, that is enough. Right? So natural opulence. Right? That's the way humanity is meant to live. So that's being described here in this verse, right? We're hearing about the natural opulence of swaga, right? The heavenly planets. Mm. Now, what is the chapter called? The chapter is called The Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. Why is it called that? Because in this material world, everyone will go through a crisis. Or 10 crises. Or I'm 54 now, so I've been through 50 crises. Or maybe 108. This is material world. Hare Baba, if you want peace, go to Vaikuntha. You don't get peace here. Right? It's a good chapter because it's called His Crisis. Because everyone will be put into difficulty. Hands up if you've been put into difficulty in this material world. Everyone. You can't escape, right? The only people who maybe don't put their hands up are the kids. That's only because you're kids, you haven't gone through difficulty. When I was a kid, actually I'd gone through difficulty when I was a kid as well. But then as you get older, then more and more crisis will come and difficult. So we need inspiration. That's why we have the Vedic literatures. Right? The Vedic literatures teach us and give us inspiration. They're there to inspire us. That's why the Mahabharata is there. That's why Ramayana is there. That's why Bhagavatam is there. Right? All of these stories are there to inspire us. Because when you think your life is difficult, because sometimes your life will get difficult, your life is not so difficult compared to Arjuna's. Right? Did you see what Arjuna went through? Right? You see what the Pandavas went through? You think your life is difficult? Did your family members ever try to poison you? Hands up. Hands up. Your family, imagine that. Your cousins try to poison you. Hey, happy birthday. Come over for a birthday. Here's your cake. By the way, it's got poison in it. Right? They didn't tell Bhima. They didn't tell Bhima that there was poison in his cake. Happy birthday, Bhima likes to eat. One of Bhima's names was? Vrikoda. Vrikoda means? Yeah, it means alligator belly or wolf belly. Vrikoda means like very strong. You know, when the Pandavas used to go and collect alms, they would go out during the day, collect alms so they could eat. And then when they got back, half was for Bhima and half was for everyone else. Now, he used to eat a lot. Because, you know, he was, I've heard that he was 12 foot tall. You know, he's like huge. Right? So he used to eat a lot. So they said, happy birthday, here's your cake. So he ate the cake and then he went, collapsed because there was poison. And then they thought, what should we do with him? We have to get rid of the body. When you kill someone, you have to get rid of the body. Right? Because otherwise everyone will say, oh, what happened? Right? So that, what do? They pushed him into the river. And then he sank down to the bottom of the river. And then the Nagas came and the Nagas bit him. But their poison nullified the poison in his body. So it's like anti-venom. You know when you get a snake bite? All right, hands up, you ever been bitten by a snake? One person? Yeah. So then what happens when they bite you? They give you anti-venom. All right? They give you the poison to neutralize the poison. Poison neutralizes poison. Just like when you get sunburn, you go into the hot shower and then you feel like it hurts, but then the relief comes. So the heat neutralizes the heat, right? Or the poison neutralizes the poison. So he got bitten by the snake, and then his poison was neutralized. So he woke up, but he's at the bottom of a river, and now he's angry. Imagine your birthday, you wake up in the bottom of the river. Right? And you're like, now he's angry. And then the Nagas, they came to him, and they said, we'll give you Amrita. Amrita means like we have Charanamrita. So like a pot of nectar. So they gave him 8 pots, right? And then he drank all the pots of nectar. And each time he drank a pot, how strong was Bhima? 10,000 elephants. You know how strong that is? No, sir, I mean, meditate on it. How strong is, imagine 10,000 elephants outside right now and they start pushing something. Now that's power. So Bhima's like that. 10,000 elephants is so powerful, right? So every time he drank a pot, he became 10,000 times stronger. So he became, by the time he drank the 8 pots, he was 80,000 elephants strong, right? That's why he's practically the strongest man on the earth, practically, right? Not the strongest, but he was almost the strongest, like on the earth, he was so powerful, 80,000 elephants. You know, there's a pastime in... you know when Shishupal insulted Krishna, that Leela, and he's insulting Krishna. And then Krishna had the, you know when you chant, you have your counting beads. So Krishna said, I will tolerate 100 insults from Shishupal. So Shishupal was just insulting Krishna. So Krishna is just like with these beads, he's counting like this, pulling them down, waiting for 100 to come. And then he... Sudarshan Chakra. So when he was insulting Krishna, Bhima was there, and Bhima was going to get up and go and kill him with his club, just smash him, Shishupal, because he's insulting Krishna. No one can handle, no devotee can handle hearing the Lord insulted. And who was sitting next to Bhima? Bhishma. Grand Bhishma. And he was sitting on their throne, they had their seats, and Bhishma had one hand on Bhima's arm, and Bhima was trying to get up, right, to go and kill Shishupal. He couldn't move. That's how strong Bhishma was. Imagine 80,000 elephants, and Bhishma's holding with one hand. And he said, just wait. He said, wait. And he said, Krishna will take care. Don't worry. He said, just wait. And Bhishma's ready to get up. And Bhishma's just holding him like this. That's how strong Bhishma was. So Bhima, he drank all of those. And then he became 80,000 elephants. So then he came out of the water, strong as 80,000 elephants. And when his cousins saw him come out, everyone, oh my God, everyone left. They tried to kill him so many times. And sometimes when his cousins, they were climbing trees, you know, kids like to climb trees. Just like these kids, I see them getting on the hay bales and climbing on the trail. I've seen. Right? They like to climb the trees, right? Bhima, when his cousins were up the tree, used to go and grab the tree and shake it. And they would all fall out of the tree, right? Hit the ground. Sometimes they'd break their arms and all sorts of things. Right? And Bhima would laugh. He'd shake the tree. Right? He's so powerful. So that's why this chapter is called the Elephant Gajendra's Crisis. Because all of us will go through crisis. We'll go through difficulty. But why do we hear these stories? Because when we're going through something difficult, we can think of the Pandavas. We never went through what they went through. What about the house of lack? Have you ever been in the house that someone set fire to? Hands up. Anyone been? Imagine you're asleep and someone comes and sets fire to the house. Right? It's very distressful. Right? What else did they do to them? Right? They tried to kill them in so many ways. So many ways. Imagine your family's trying to kill you. That's the difficulty they were going through. Right? So that's why we have these stories. Right? These stories are meant to inspire us. So that when we go through difficulty, we can think, oh, it's not so bad. Right? The Pandavas went through much worse than us. Or we can think here, Gajendra. Right? When was the last time you had an alligator holding your leg? Think about it. When was the last time? You know, you went for a swim and then an alligator's got your leg. Right? It's quite distressful. Right? And then he starts praying. Krishna, please. Yeah, he remembered all of his prayers from his previous life. So that's why we have these chapters, right? They are to inspire us. No? Now, Prabhupada makes an important point that there is no need of imagination. Well, Prabhupada says, the attempts to go from earth to the moon have failed, but the people of earth can understand what exists on other planets. So I was actually listening last night while I was driving here. I was listening to some Malati Mataji and Kusha and Ananga Manjari, Prabhupada's disciples. They were speaking about Prabhupada memories and beautiful pastimes, some pastimes I'd never heard before. So they were telling that in 1969, I think it was July 16th, that was the moon landing. When that happened, everyone was watching it on television, right? And even the devotees, they were with Prabhupada in London, and Prabhupada was in the other room. One devotee said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, come, they're landing on the moon, come and watch. Prabhupada walked in and he looked at it, and he said, they are not on the moon. Prabhupada said that. Interesting, because now many people say it. 20% of America believe they never went to the moon, right? So it's, many people believe that now. But Prabhupada said it when it happened. He said, they are not on the moon. Prabhupada already had a different way of seeing the world. And Prabhupada's servant at the time, I can't remember what his name was, but Prabhupada's servant at the time, he said, no, Prabhupada, look, they're on the moon. And Prabhupada said, turn off the idiot box. He said, it is making you all idiots. That's why we don't have televisions. I don't have a television in my ashram. I don't watch television. I haven't watched television for 35 years. I mean, I've seen it. You know, sometimes you're somewhere and you see the television, but I don't watch it like every day. Most people, they watch it every day. You know, I watch the television. But then you become an idiot. You become a disciple of Shukracharya. Who is Shukracharya? One-eyed, yeah. He is the guru of the Asuras. So the Asura, he is their guru, and he only has one eye. So the TV is like one eye, Shukracharya, the guru of the Asuras, and whatever the TV says, everyone says, yes, Guru Maharaj, I will do it. Yes, the TV says, go here, do this, do that. Be like, everyone, yes, Maharaj, yes, I will do it, I will do it. You're brainwashed. People in the 1970s, they used to say the Hare Krishnas are brainwashed. We're not brainwashed. Prabhupada said, your brain is dirty, you need it to be cleaned. Right? They're brainwashed. You know, they're watching television. Oh, go and buy this, go and do that. Go and be like, no, that's all brainwashing. We're not the brainwashed ones. Hare Baba, we are not brainwashed. They are brainwashed. Who is crazy? The Prabhupada wrote the essay back in the 50s, I think. Prabhupada wrote, who is crazy? Is it us or them? Because they say we are crazy. And we say, we're not sure. Someone else might be crazy. I used to live just in this back alley here before I moved to the farm, Little Page Street. I used to live just down there, number 79. For 7 years I was living there. So one morning I got up to come to Mangalati. And I came out about 20 past four, came out of my house, and my neighbour, you know, we were friends, we would see each other. He pulled up, he got out of the taxi. So he was just getting home. He'd been out all night somewhere. Just getting home. And he maybe a little bit intoxicated. So he got out of the taxi, and I was walking out. He said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to the temple. And he said, you're crazy. You know, who gets up 20 past four, goes to the... And I looked at him, and I didn't say anything, but I thought, man, like, who's crazy here? You're going to bed. You've been up all night intoxicated, you know, dancing in some nightclub or something. And then now you're coming at 20 past... You're going to bed at 20 past four. I'm getting up at... You know, like, who's crazy? That's why Krishna says, Bhagavad Gita, what is nighttime for the transcendentalists is daytime for the materialists, and vice versa. Whatever they say, it is the opposite for us. So, as it says here, Prabhupada said, the attempts to go from the earth to the moon have failed. But the people of earth can understand what exists on other planets. There is no need of imagination. One may take actual knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam and be satisfied. So Prabhupada is saying here, just by hearing Bhagavatam, we can understand what's on other planets, even what's in the spiritual world. But many people will listen to this, but they will not agree. They'll say, no, it's just mythology, or it's just your imagination, or it's blind faith. Right? So why is it that we believe this and other people do not? Right? Because spiritual life begins with, what is the first stage of spiritual life? Shraddha, faith, right? Now, where does faith come from? It comes from Agyata Sukriti. Agyata Sukriti means unknown devotional activities. Just like every day, saying Crossways or Gopals or Radish Chaibat, like that. There are people who come there sometimes every day for prasadam. Do you see it? Practically every day. Like every day or practically every day. Those people don't understand. It's called Agyata Sukriti. They don't know this is prasad. Maybe they do now because they're coming every day and we tell them, but they don't know it's prasad. They just come and take prasadam every day. That agyata, unknown devotional service, honoring Krishna's remnants, they become purified. So much so that one day they will become a devotee in this life or the next life. It will purify their consciousness, right? So this is called agyata sukriti, and it establishes shraddha. Or faith. That's why we became devotees. How do we become devotees? Because we did Agyata Sukriti in the previous life. Otherwise, how did we become devotee in this life? Right? We did devotional service previously. And that accumulated. Haridas Thakur says, after heaps and heaps in Harinam Chintamani, heaps and heaps of Agyata Sukriti, you take to devotional service. So now we're practicing bhakti. Right? And we believe these things. We believe. Oh no, what's it like on the moon? We can read about it. What's it like in Goloka? We can read about it. What's it like in Swarga? We know what it's like on the other planets. But you have to have faith, because other people read this, they say, you're brainwashed, you're crazy. This is not true. I said to my auntie when I became a Hare Krishna many years ago, then I said to my auntie, if you just chant Hare Krishna, you'll become purified. Right? She said, that's ridiculous. I just say Hare Krishna. I said, see, you just become... She said, Hare Krishna, like, you become purified. She said, that's ridiculous. No Shraddha. No faith. But for us, we chant every day, it gives us Shraddha, and then we can believe these things. So that's why we can believe it. Now, so this is called the Elephant Gajendra's Crisis, this chapter. Very important chapter. And there's very important lessons in this pastime, because historically, Prabhupada was writing this, and you'll see, like later on, Prabhupada draws a very nice analogy. Because one of Prabhupada's sannyasi disciples fell down exactly when Prabhupada was writing this. Right? Madhudwiza Prabhu. Madhudwiza Prabhu was the GBC for Australia at that time. This is back 74, 75. He purchased this temple we're in right now. I mean, what a service. He purchased this temple we're in right now. You see, I saw the video the other day, actually, when Prabhupada installed Gaur Nitai, Madhudwiza Prabhu was standing right there helping Prabhupada install. I mean, imagine the service he did. Prabhupada called him the Emperor of Kirtan. Right? Prabhupada called him. But then he fell down. He was a sannyasi, and he fell down. Right? Now, Prabhupada uses, because Prabhupada was writing when Prabhupada heard about this, Prabhupada was writing... And it's very interesting because it also happened to Balimadan Prabhu. Balimadan Prabhu was one of the first devotees who came to Australia to start this whole Hare Krishna movement back in 1970. Right? He also fell down. And what did Prabhupada do? When he fell down from sannyas, Prabhupada married him. He did his Vivaha Jagya, his marriage ceremony. Prabhupada did it. Prabhupada didn't reject him. What sort of a devotee are you? What sort of a sannyasi are you? Go. No, Prabhupada said, and then Prabhupada writes in this chapter, in this pastime, you have to fight Maya from the best position. Right? The alligator wins in the water, the elephant wins on the land. Prabhupada makes this analogy. So Grihastha Ashram will make one devotee strong in Krishna consciousness. Sannyas or Brahmachari Ashram will make someone else strong in that ashram, in their Krishna consciousness. You just have to find which ashram you're in. That's all. It's not a big deal. All are equal. All are, because everyone is serving Krishna. Everyone is dear to Krishna. One is the safe way. One is the sure way. Right? If you're brahmachari or sannyasi, you will surely go back to Godhead if you do it properly. Right? If you're grihastha, it is safe. It will take time. It's gradual. But you will also go back to Godhead. Right? So that's why Prabhupada in this section, he says you have to be situated in the right place. And Prabhupada did not reject. Right? When Madhudwiza Prabhu fell down, some of his godbrothers, they found out and they told everyone, all the other devotees. They said, oh, Madhudwiza Prabhu. And then when Prabhupada found out, he said, why did you tell everyone? Prabhupada said, now it's going to be very difficult for him to come back. He'll feel embarrassed. And that's what happened. He left, he went to live in Hawaii, and he stayed away from the devotees for a period of time. Prabhupada said, it is not, he said, you don't speak about these things publicly. This is between his spiritual master and him. Right? And then he left for some time. And then Prabhupada in 1977, when Prabhupada was leaving and he was very ill, he was crying. He said, where is my son, Madhudwiza? Where is my son? Right? And then finally, Madhudwiza Prabhu got the message from Hawaii that Prabhupada wanted to see him. He flew to Vrindavan, saw Prabhupada, and when he came to see Prabhupada, Prabhupada said, and Prabhupada was so happy to see him. You know, he was a grihastha at that time, and he had a child, a young child. And when Prabhupada saw him, he said, where's your wife and child? He said, oh, Prabhupada, I left them in Hawaii. Prabhupada said, why? You should have brought them to see me. You know, that was Prabhupada's compassion. He didn't reject him. He said, why didn't you bring them to see me? I would have liked to have met your child. That was Prabhupada's compassion. Right? So Prabhupada is teaching us here, it doesn't matter which ashram you're in. Right? Because this chapter is called Gajendra's Crisis. If you're a brahmacharya sannyasi, you're going to go through a crisis. Right? If you're a grihastha, you're going to go through a crisis. We're all going through a crisis. Right? We're just one big crisis family. Everyone's just suffering. And what's the most important thing in spiritual life is sadhu sangha. You have to be there with the devotees, because when one of us is struggling, all the others have to hold them. Right? Say, hey, we'll look after you now. Right? Till you get strong again. Right? So that's what we all have to do. We have to support each other. That's spiritual life. Right? Because we're all going to go through difficulty. We're all going to go through suffering. Right? So that's why this chapter is called the Gajendra's Crisis. It is very apt. It's relevant for all of us. Right? So I'll stop here. Are there any questions or comments? What we discussed. Any other questions or comments? Microphone is coming. Do we have any microphones in ISKCON? Turns into microphone key.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for the nice class. Prabhu, we see how in this chapter it's been describing about the heavenly planets and the Trikuta mountain. So my question is, are the symptoms of Kali Yuga, do they affect the heavenly planets also, or do they just affect the material world?
It's a good question. The heavenly planets are the material world. They're not above it. Goloka is above it. Vaikuntha is above it. So they're part of the material world. But Kali Yuga does not affect it. And there's no Kali Yuga. You know, we know we're in Kali Yuga now, right? How do we know we're in Kali Yuga? Because you have Wi-Fi. No? There's no Wi-Fi in Treta Yuga or Dwapara Yuga. That's like, you know it's Kali Yuga, right? Because you got Wi-Fi. Right? So there's no Kali Yuga in the heavenly planets. They know it's Kali Yuga because heavenly planets, the weather is good all the time. Every day, nice weather. You know, it's like living in, say, Hawaii when it's good. Because Hawaii, not good every day, but the good days when weather's really nice, that's what it's like. Heavenly planets like that every day, swaga, just beautiful weather. But there's like a dark cloud in the corner of the sky. And when they see that, they say, oh, it's Kali Yuga. That's all that happens. That's all they know. That's okay. But don't go to swaga. Because sometimes we hear about swaga, we say, oh, it's so nice. So nice. Let's go there. But no, you don't want to go there because even there, there's problems. Yes, sir.
Hare Krishna, thanks for a nice class. You mentioned how in the Bhagavatam, when we're reading all these pastimes or descriptions of different planetary systems, different types of living entities, all these quite far out concepts, and it's quite, they're quite out there. In the early days when, this was introduced, when Prabhupada introduced this, it seemed pretty, crazy to conceptualize all these things. It's hard to believe. But now in like the modern kind of, 2024, everyone's got these crazy imaginative, concept of the world, or they have maybe through drug-induced, vision, they have all these like spiritual awakening, things like that. How do we convince them that what their perception of all these crazy, idealistic, dimension is not really real, and what we're actually trying to introduce to them is actually, real?
Yeah, that's not easy to convince someone. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said it takes gallons of blood to make one devotee. So to make one devotee, it takes a lot of effort. It's a lot of effort to make someone understand all these things. So, Prabhupada said back in the 70s, because sometimes, we hear about the construction of the universe or the way the universe is. And Prabhupada, two things he really emphasized in the final couple of years before he left, 75 to 76, Every day, he would speak about the Bhaktivedanta Institute, the science division of ISKCON, and the Vedic Planetarium, right, which is being built now in Mayapur. Prabhupada was, in the last couple of years, he was getting the devotees to research the Vedic Planetarium so it would be accurate, right, the description of the universe and how it's all. And then Tamal Krishnamurti actually said to Prabhupada, "Oh, Prabhupada, it seems, you know," Prabhupada said, "You are prejudiced. You are prejudiced." So if someone says, "Oh, you know, they don't believe these things," we just say to them, "You are prejudiced." Because Prabhupada was sitting there one time, he was giving a lecture. He was talking about, during the lecture, eagles, which fly in between planets, and they pick up elephants and they feed the elephants to their babies. This is the Hare Krishna movement, right? So, you know, we believe these things. So, you know, big, and then at the end of the class, Prabhupada said, "Any questions?" So everyone looked at each other. You know, then one devotee said, "Prabhupada?" He said, "Yes." He said, "You mentioned there were big eagles that fly and pick up elephants." Prabhupada said, "Yes." And they said, "Prabhupada, is this true?" Prabhupada said, "What would you know? You're still in the womb of your mother." And what do we know? How do we know these things are not true? You know, we're so limited in our perception. Right? So, you know, the second part of your question was, how do we convince someone? Give them pakoras. Okay. In other words, purify them. Give them prasadam, give them the holy name, give them to read Prabhupada's books. Gradually it will come. I was giving a lecture at the farm, Sunday feast, many years ago, about 10 or 15 years ago, I was giving a lecture. So this one lawyer, he came to the farm, and we're, you know, speaking to him, and he's a very nice man. And during the lecture, the Sunday feast lecture, I was saying, on the sun planet, you know, the sun, we look at the sun, I said, there's a civilization, and there's horses, and there's kshatriyas, and there's chariots, and all made of fire. And he's looking at me like, okay, their food's nice, but, you know, it's like, you know. So then, you know, he was saying like that. And then he went away, and then he came back the next month, 1 month later for our Sunday feast, and I was talking to him, and he said, "You know, when I came last month, you were talking about the sun and all these things." He said, I thought you were crazy. But then he said, "I was surfing the other day, and I was watching the sun come up, and he'd been taking prasadam." You know, he goes to Gopal's and at our farm. And he's surfing, he's watching the sun come, and he said, "Maybe it is true." So gradually, by purification, right, and contact with the Daivi Prakriti, the spiritual energy, someone can come to the platform where they understand these things. So like Prabhupada said, we're just prejudiced, that's all. No, because we've been told our whole lives, oh, evolution is true and all these things. That's just, now we're prejudiced. Now we have all these misconceptions. So when we hear the Vedic conception, then we go, "Oh, is that true? Or is that, you know, like that?" But no, it's true. Just eat more pakoras. Any other question? Yeah. Yes, sir.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. My question is that you said if you watch television, you'll get a...
You will get the demon,
you
will become demon.
You'll become a demon. Uh-oh. So then, can you watch Little Krishna, or you'll get the demon by watching Little Krishna? Not.
Yeah, that is okay. That is okay. Because television is not bad. But the shows on television are bad. That's the point. So if you have good shows, Krishna conscious TV, like now we have Hare Krishna TV, and we have Little Krishna and all these things. If you watch that, that will purify your consciousness. You know, when I used to stay with one devotee in Melbourne, and they had a young child, and they used to watch Little Krishna 37 times a day. Right? So whenever I go through the lounge room, there's Little Krishna, so, you know, Krishna the butter thief was a naughty little boy. Krishna the butter thief. Like, Even I know the songs on Little Krishna. Yeah, I never watched the whole show, but, you know, like that. So those things are okay. Krishna conscious things on television are okay. But not those other things. Otherwise you become a demon. Okay? Any other questions? Yeah, over here.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you for the nice class. I was just contemplating that in this material world, it doesn't happen like that. Like if you want to believe in something like material education, if a teacher just says something, the student will not just by hearing. Like nowadays, it's like more of experiential learning. So they hear, they see videos, and then you give the students the experience. So material education is something like, you know, you need to hear, see, experience, and then you learn. But as we read Bhagavatam, like emphasis is on just hearing and having faith and...
Some of it, not all of it. I mean, modern education is empirical. In other words, you have to show us and then we will believe it. But many things in the Bhagavatam can be proven by empiricism. So, you know, part of it. I mean, there's some things we can't show you. Like, you know... a half man, half lion jumped out of a pillar. I can't show you that, but we believe it. But then there's things they say that they can't show us. You know, a half man, half monkey used to walk around the jungle, you know, and then one day a human dropped out of a monkey, and then, you know, like they can't show us either. So they can't prove their points empirically. We can't prove our points empirically. You know, so then it's a question of where is your faith? Is your faith there in evolution or is your faith there in the Vedas? So why is our faith in the Vedas? Because our prasadam is better. Seriously. Why do we? Because, you know, Hare Krishna food is the best. Right? So then our culture is the best. Or our lifestyle is the best. All these things are the best. Prabhupada said, even if Krishna is not God, our life is still the best. So it's a better way to live. We're more peaceful. We're more happy. Right? So that gives us faith that the lion, half man, half lion, that jumps out of the pillar is true. Or you can go and hang out with them. Their food's not very good. Right? And they talk about monkeys, you know, coming out, you know, men coming out of monkeys. So you choose which camp you want to be in. That's all.
But we're living in the both, like, you know, we're out there in the material thing as well, and then doing our spiritual practices as well. So, yeah, we need to have faith there and in this, like, you know.
No, then you're qualified by your education in the Vedic system. You're qualified to look at theirs objectively and understand what parts of it are true or accurate. But some parts are not accurate. So the parts are not accurate, like evolution, we say, okay, reject it. Darwin himself said the theory is not proven. And he invented the whole thing. And everyone, when I look back when I was at school, they used to teach it like it was a fact. But it's called the theory of evolution. It's never been proven. But we're just told, oh, no, it's a fact, like that. So objectively, we look at it through the Vedic perspective and we say, no, that's not true. So we can understand, we can differentiate the good parts and the parts which are incorrect.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Okay. Someone else had a question? Any other questions? Okay, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gauranga.